Hola, mi amores. It's your big sis, E. And you know what this is. It's The Call, where we talk to dynamic, game-changing women about their journey to answer their life's calling. It's season three, people. So much has happened in the world since we last talked. It has really been a long time. Okay, it's taking everything in me not to hit that Aaliyah and Timbaland. You know, it's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a dope beat to step two. I'm embarrassing my family. Okay, let me stop. Anyway, it really has been a long time, though. And I'm excited for you to hear our first guest. But before we get into it, we're kicking off a new segment here on The Call, Ask E. This is basically my chance to hear directly from you, your actual voice, and answer some of your burning questions. And hopefully I can share some of what I've learned about this mission-driven, called life. So, without further ado, it's time for the first edition of Ask E.
Hi, Erica. My name is Carla from Denver, Colorado. And I just wanted to know what advice you would have for women trying to discern between something they're passionate about and what is a true calling. I'm passionate about stalking people on Instagram, but I'm not sure if that's a true calling. Anyway, love the show. Thanks for your advice. Bye.
Carla, that is such a good question. First, I gotta let you know that I too am passionate about Instagram stalking. I'm also really good at it. So in case anyone is listening and in need of my services, I am your girl. But no, seriously, I'm really glad you brought up the relationship between passion and calling and that you realize they are not the same thing. I feel like all the time I'm hearing people say, follow your passion and do what you're passionate about. And that's right, right? Passion is what makes life fun and interesting and enjoyable. The actual definition is an intense enthusiasm for something. So who wouldn't want to do that and pursue that? But it's also what I like to call a necessary yet insufficient condition for a calling. Okay, what does that mean? Let's take an egg, all right? You need an egg to make a cake. Well, at least in most of the recipes I know, and please don't hit me up online and tell me, Erica, you can make a cake without an egg. Just follow the example, okay? You need an egg for a cake. An egg is necessary. But just because you have an egg doesn't mean you actually have a cake. It's insufficient. And that's the same thing with passion. You need passion, and you can be passionate about a lot of things. I, for one, am passionate about music and singing, and I have been my whole life, but I've never felt called or compelled to make that my profession. It's insufficient for a calling. Okay, so then if we know that we have a lot of passions and a passion doesn't a calling make, what does make a calling? How do you figure it out? Well, that's the beautiful part, at least in my definition of calling, is that you don't have to figure it out. I like that word better than purpose because purpose sounds like something you have to explore and discover and dig and find, whereas a calling implies that your only job is to listen and to answer. It's not really up to you when someone calls you. It's not really up to you what you're doing when they call you. Your job is to listen out for it and to respond. So what does that mean? That means do things, experiment, go to work, try things. Yes, try the things that you're passionate about, but all the while, pay attention. Observe the patterns. See if you can look back and find the threads of what you enjoyed and what made you feel most fulfilled while you were doing things that may or may not end up ultimately being your calling. One trick for me is to ask if there is some impact to others that really motivates me. I was talking to an esthetician yesterday. I went and got a facial, and I said, how did you know that you were supposed to be an esthetician for the rest of your life, that this was your thing? And I didn't even give her the word calling. And she said, well, I knew it was my calling because I really, really wanted to help other girls who had brown skin and had a lot of skin issues, and there was no place for them to go in this field. She was motivated and driven not just by her passion for skincare, but by a desire to help others. That's how she knew, and she listened and followed it. So I hope that helps. It's not really a case of one, two, three, do these things and you'll instantly hear a calling, but you should breathe easy and know that it is not only up to you to dig and find, but that you should be exploring, doing what you do best in the world, and hopefully you'll hear when that calling comes. Okay, so these are big questions that y'all are answering me, and I love it. I may even start doing some longer videos on my IG that break down these answers in a bit more detail. So make sure you're following me at Missy Will and call 702-670-CALL, C-A-L-L. Leave a message with your question. All right, now enough of me. I'm turning the mic over to another lady who drops gems for a living.
A lot of well-meaning, empathetic people are just really hard on themselves about where they are in their journey, in their understanding, in their place in the world. And so I hope that people who know me And people that don't know me can read my story and think like, huh, maybe I don't need to be so hard on myself.
That was Francesca Ramsey, also known as Cheska Lee. You may know her from YouTube or from Comedy Central's Larry Wilmore show, or her MTV show Decoded that unpacks identity, or her new book. Well, that escalated quickly, Memoirs and Mistakes of an Accidental Activist. But wherever you know her from, or even if you've never heard of her at all I know is that her voice is so right for the crazy times we're living in. When so many people are trying to figure out how to be woke, I hope y'all can see my air quotes there, okay? How to be woke and how to do it the right way, and how to make a living with their values intact, she's doing it. And we're gonna talk all about it. She also happens to be a really, really close friend of mine and someone who embodies what I try to live every day, how to hustle hard, but how to also hustle with heart. You'll come away from this convo the way I come away from every single conversation I have with Fran, inspired and ready to work. So without further ado, here's Francesca Cheska Lee Ramsey on the call. Francesca!
Hi!
I'm so happy to have you here.
It's so great to see you in person.
I know. It's been maybe a year?
It's been maybe a year, but we had a long phone call that long ago, which was really great.
We've had a lot of text exchanges, a lot of DMs. I've slid up in your DMs a couple times through the phone.
So much love.
I know. So I'm so happy you're here.
Yay, me too.
And there's so much to talk to you about because I met you 4 years ago?
Yes,
it was. I remember because I had just moved to LA and I started at Upworthy. And it's just been so interesting, fascinating, fun to watch your career evolve.
Thank you.
And now we've got a book coming out.
Yes.
We've got a book coming out May 22nd.
May 22nd. Well, that escalated quickly. You have to say it like that.
Well, that escalated quickly. I love that title. What's the subhead is?
Memoirs and Mistakes of an Accidental Activist.
How did you come up with that title?
Well, initially I wanted to call the book Accidental Activist. Mm-hmm. And I'm so fortunate because my editor is really wonderful and she was like, let's play with this idea. There's just, we don't want to alienate the audience and make them think it's just about one thing. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, it is a story about how the internet has impacted my career in great ways and really embarrassing and terrible ways. Uh-huh. And so, well, that escalated quickly was just a perfect way to explain what happens when you're having a conversation online with somebody and it goes left, but also how my career happened.
I was going to say, my first thought was your career.
Yeah. So it's career. It's also communication. Mm-hmm. And that's really what the book is about. It's about using the internet to have conversations, but also using the internet to build a space for yourself. And I just feel so fortunate that I was able to do that.
Mm-hmm. The accidental activist part was actually the part that I love that escalated quickly. I love that as a title.
Mm-hmm.
The part that really jumped out to me, knowing your story and kind of being in this world of activism and now kind of this modern era of activism,
right,
is the accidental part.
Absolutely. I mean, I was so very fortunate that I had a viral video in 2012, Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls. And for me, that video was just about my personal experience growing up in South Florida. And I was not prepared for the onslaught of praise or hatred over that video, mm-hmm, but also the conversations that people were asking me to have that I realized I was not prepared for. I had not heard the term microaggressions before.
Mm-hmm.
I had an understanding of privilege, but not like a real firm grasp and understanding of even understanding my own personal privilege in that respect. And so I accidentally stumbled into this place where people were putting a lot of expectations on me,
mm-hmm,
and saying, like, now you are a voice for Black women and or
pressure.
Absolutely. And I just wasn't ready. And I don't think anything can prepare you for going viral. But there's really nothing that can prepare you for somebody sticking a mic in your face and being like, explain X, Y, and Z to me. I mean, I went to school for acting and graphic design. I was just like not ready at all. And so I feel very fortunate that I was able to have a community that kind of sprung up around me to support me in real life and online, and that I was able to have a community that let me make mistakes so that I could learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have just tried to be really transparent about those mistakes that helped me get here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had a lot of accidents, not those kind of accidents, but
it
was messy. It's been messy. It stays messy. And so that's really what the book is about.
I think it's interesting, too, because we're in this moment when a lot of people, especially post-2016, right, the election, where people are now kind of wrestling with what it means to be an activist.
Right.
Am I an activist? Does activism just mean speaking out? Does it mean protesting in the streets? Like, my journey into activism was almost the complete opposite of yours in that, like, I actually majored in African-American studies and public policy, and then I went into, the political world.
Right.
And, like, microaggression was my middle name. I'm like, yes, I know all these terms that, you know. And there was that world where activism in that environment meant we're running campaigns and there's organizers and policy. And I feel like the definition has changed over time.
Absolutely.
What does it mean now?
I mean, I think you hear people throw around the term like slacktivist all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm of two minds about it in the sense that I think everyone's activism has to take shape in different ways. You know, it is so powerful to see students right now, like, protesting and doing walkouts, right? But not everybody feels like they're comfortable or ready to do that. And I don't necessarily think that it's fair to say to somebody, well, you don't care about this cause enough if you don't boycott this company or if you don't stay home from work today, because, like, maybe that person still really needs to pay their bills.
Right.
Or maybe they're not out to their family, so they don't feel comfortable supporting XYZ cause because, you know, mom still pays my student loans or whatever it is,
right.
You know, so everyone's activism takes shape differently. For me, I think it's really about using your voice in whatever way that feels comfortable to you to uplift important issues and causes that you think will help make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that can take the shape of a protest, but I think that it can also take the shape of a conversation with a family member who really needs to be challenged on something oppressive or bigoted or hateful that they've said or done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that work is as valuable as the work that's happening in the streets, on the election ballot.
Right.
I think that ideally they would all work together, but I think everybody has to start where they feel comfortable and hopefully know that it's a continuous process and journey.
Yeah, there's a kind of phrase that we say in church. It's like every joint supplies, like that you are the body.
In
this moment, like that activism or the change that we want to see in the world is the body, and there's all these different parts of the movement and all of them work together.
Ugh, right? I love that.
And like you can't function properly without one of those pieces.
Right.
And so that there are levels to this and where people find their home and their place is really a part of what we talk about in the show as being like maybe part of your calling.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because I've said that in my own way in the sense that, you know, I host this show about race and pop culture and identity and
Decoded
for MTV. And I love the show. I've been doing it for 3 years. I'm very proud of it. But it's interesting to me because I will sometimes encounter people who say, like, that show is so basic and we don't need that. And my response is, well, everyone has to start at 101. Like,
right.
Every single person, like, maybe your 101 happened years ago and you don't remember, but it did happen at some point. And so there are people doing 201 and 401 and night courses and whatever. But, like, over here, we are doing introduction and 101.
Yeah.
And not to say that that's what I'm going to do forever, but I found that I had a talent for it. And I think I figured out that talent for it largely because I did 101 not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking, oh, wow, is anybody else realizing that this stuff is super interesting and hasn't had these conversations with their family members or in their classrooms? And thankfully, there were a lot of people who have not been exposed to this stuff and they need to be exposed. So now that they did 101, I'm hoping that it will encourage them to take the next step in their journey and their activism to get to 201.
Right. So you certainly had no idea that this was going to be a career for you, right?
No, there was no online career. You know, I wanted to be an actress. That was the dream. I went to acting school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still paying for those 2 years of an acting degree.
Wait,
listen.
That's so hard.
I was rolling around on the floor pretending to be a baby and shit. And I was like, why am I doing, like, this is not acting to me.
Right.
I don't want to do this. So, yeah, that was the dream. And YouTube was really just a place where I could make stuff because I couldn't audition and I couldn't get an agent. And I was just frustrated by that. And so just making stuff for fun, not thinking that it was going to become a career.
Right, because it was your side hustle at the time. You were a graphic designer by day and then making YouTube videos, not even just by night, but sometimes on your lunch break.
Sometimes on my lunch break. But on the weekends, certainly, and after work sometimes. And sometimes I was waking up early before I was going to work so I could get some editing done. It was just fun. There's no way I could have ever anticipated going viral or that leading to an agent or writing jobs or television jobs, writing a book. Absolutely not.
So this I always find fascinating, and I think I've said this on the show before, because when younger women ask me, like, so how do I do X, Y, or Z in my career? The face, y'all can't
see her face
right now.
The face that I'm making is like, I don't know.
That is how I feel so much. But what I've tried to unpack is, okay, I can't tell you. First of all, a lot of us are charting our own course in this kind of lane and in this world.
Hello, were podcasts a way to make money 5 years ago?
No, ma'am. So we're like making it up as we go. But that's not a helpful answer. So I've really tried to like dig deep, and I realized that part of it is I follow my purpose but not plans. Because like I have no sense of what I'm doing 6 months from now. But I do feel like I've been really clear about this is what my talent is.
And this is what I want to do.
This is what I want to do. This is what I'm drawn to.
Yes.
And wherever that takes me, I'm going to, as long as I can do this thing in that environment. So what has been that thing for you that is, if it wasn't, okay, I knew I was going to get famous off of YouTube, what were you really kind of trying to achieve?
Side note, you and I are the same person.
I know.
Like, when you talk about stuff sometimes, I'm just like, yeah, I'm just sitting here just going, yes, 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 all of those things. Because when you talk about following your purpose, I have always known my goal, the thing I've always wanted, is I've wanted to have my own television show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to acting school, and I remember one time our acting teacher chewed our class out. We were not focused, and he made everybody go around the room and talk about, like, why they were here. And I was just so emotional. I was crying. I was like, I want this so bad. I just want this. And, like, people were—
It was so dramatic.
Oh, it was so dramatic. People were coming up to me afterwards and being like, we're going to make it. Like, people still text me about that to this day. Like,
wow.
Remember that impassioned speech you gave freshman year of high school about wanting to make
Wait,
it?
Wait, high school?
Yeah, I went to performing arts high school.
I went
middle and high school. I was taking acting classes all through 7th to 12th grade before I went off to college.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I wanted to be an actress. I didn't know what kind of show I wanted to have.
Right.
I thought I could do, like, oh, I loved some Moesha. I was like, if I could be
Moesha? I was obsessed.
I was like, when I saw that show, I was like, this is it. This
I
is the move.
I think we all felt like that. I felt special, but to be honest, I think most brown girls felt like that. I was rocking the braids.
Oh, the braids.
Like Brandy,
yes.
The dark
hats,
lip liner.
Yes, everything.
Yep.
I watched that show, and I loved that Brandy could sing and was musical. And you know, listen, I don't know if y'all know, but Erica can throw down.
Wait, how do you know? How do you know?
There was a karaoke session during Upworthy where, you know what it was like? It was like that scene in Sister Act 2 when in Jesus, what? Like when that guy sings and like Whoopi turns around like, what? That guy could sing?
Stop it.
That's what happened. We were all karaoke.
God,
you know, having
so
a good
silly.
Time. Everyone's singing like, oh, you know, I can sing a little bit. Erica gets up there and everyone's jaws on the floor. Like, whoa.
Music is my heart. But that also was why I was like, Brandy.
Right. So
this
Brandy.
Is it. Yep.
So Brandy could sing. I did Sitting Up in My Room at the talent show. I just was like, oh, this is what I want. Now, I didn't know how I would get there.
Right.
I did acting school. And I left acting school because I wasn't happy with the classes. But I discovered my passion for the internet. I got a job managing the school public health's website, like updating PDFs and like making small edits to the website, because I learned HTML in like middle school. I loved the computer, and I was like, oh, this is cool. Maybe this could be my side hustle while I try to be an actress.
Mm-hmm.
I like this. I don't know if this will be my path forever, but maybe this will be a way I can make some money and go on audition on the side. That didn't happen. And then when YouTube happened, which was right before my senior year of college.
Like 05. Okay,
05. And I graduated in 06.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was like, oh, this is great. I love to blog. I want to act. I want to make stuff. This is a great way to kind of combine those passions. Same with when I ended up at Upworthy.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, this is stuff I like. I like media. I like talking about social justice. I like kind of figuring out how the internet works. I like to write. Like,
mm-hmm.
these are all my skills, and maybe I could do some video stuff. And so the idea of setting a goal for yourself, no matter how big or outrageous it feels, and then using that to check in with yourself when opportunities come, because we just talked about this the other day. Sometimes you're going to have to say no to something. Something will come along.
Yeah.
And you will think, this is such a great opportunity, but does it get me towards that thing that I want? And if the answer is no, and sometimes we can't say no, right?
Right.
You have to pay bills, right?
Yep.
But if you're in a space where you can say no, then you let it go because something better will come along. And I'm just really fortunate that those things came along. Because I would have been happy staying a graphic designer. I liked it. I mean,
it's so funny. You said that in the book. You were like, before my career exploded, I was comfortable pushing pixels at my desk job.
I really was. I mean, and even when I was at Upworthy, I loved the part of our job where we had to make the thumbnail.
Yeah, you
and
did.
Like,
people
I,
would ask you to do it for
people
us.
People would be like, well, can you teach me what your secret is? And even now, like, if I have an event or I'm speaking at a school or whatever, like, I'll make something for my Instagram and I'll look up and I'll be like, man, I spent 2 hours on this and I really have other stuff to do. But I just start getting into it and I'm like, oh, this is really fun. And so I'm very fortunate that I still get to combine all of those talents, but now in a different way.
So we both started at Upworthy, I think 2014, around that time. And I had kind of dropped the mic on my former life in politics. I'd been doing some media work, but I moved out to LA, didn't know what I wanted to do. A friend said, oh, you should try Upworthy. And I specifically took that job because I knew, I mean, we didn't work in an office. It was completely
remote. You work from home,
And that was one of the ways we initially connected because we were both the queen of side hustle.
Right. When I met you, you were like, oh, I cannot wait to talk to you because you do 8 million things and I do 8 million things and I need to know. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yes, we can definitely talk about this. And we just like hit it off. We both have big feet. I was like, listen.
Oh, I forgot about our feet.
I was like, this girl is like my Petronius, you know, like we are just like so in tune. And there is a talent to Marie Forleo called it multi-passionate. Or a multi-hyphenate. A lot of people are not cut out for it. And I remember when I was in school, my cousin saying to me, you need to pick one thing. You can't do all of these things. You need to pick whatever the one thing is because you're going to, what is it, a jack of all trades, master of none. And I just didn't believe that. I thought, well, I like all of these things. So why not pursue them and see what happens and see what ways I can incorporate them?
And that worked for you.
Absolutely.
And it works for me.
Right.
I also know some people who it doesn't work for and they are wildly successful in their single lane.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that either.
And I think also, like, you take a break, right? Like, you focus on one thing and then you say, you know, look at a freaking Childish Gambino, like, oh, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm just going to drop an album, right? Like, he doesn't have to do that, but that's something that he likes. So he can take time off from the other thing and put time towards that. To me, that's the career that I want to have, where I have the flexibility to do lots of different things on my own time and create stuff and, most of all, create opportunities for other talented, awesome people that I like and I want to work with.
I find myself always having to kind of remember hustle all the time, grind all the time, always doing so many things. And they're all things that I actually enjoy. And when I get involved in them, I can become passionate about them. And when do you check in and actually measure, does this thing matter? Am I making a difference? Am I making progress? Is it versus just being busy?
That is a really great question and something I really have been trying to recalibrate myself on. I just got back into therapy, which I feel is the most stereotypical thing to say, but it has been so great for me because my therapist actually asked me something very similar of like, why do you do this? Like, you work a lot. And that was one of the things I wanted to talk to her about, was just feeling burnt out, feeling excited about the things that I was doing, but feeling like I was just working all of the time, like I was never off, and having to say, ask myself, like, why do I do this? And are all of the things that I'm doing fulfilling me? And how much time do I need to invest in order to get to where I'm at? And so I'm really trying to do that more. Like, I've been journaling a lot. That's been really helpful for me. And I've been starting, I've done it for a while, but I've been really refocusing on making a list of goals and things that I'm working towards. And when I write in my journal, like, looking at that list.
Oh, wait, wasn't yours all beautiful and pretty?
Yeah,
I just
made that video about it. And I use colored pens and markers and I doodle and I cut stuff out of magazines. Like, it's a very cathartic process for me. Mm-hmm. And so that's been really helpful to say, like, I'm going to reflect on my day, but I'm also going to think about the things that I want to do and that are important to me and making sure I'm continuing to work towards them, but also realizing that, like, taking time off is also helping me work towards those things just as much as working all the time does.
And it's probably hard to take time off, especially because of the moment that we're in.
Right.
I was reading the beginning of your book when you talk about that where you are is this weird mix and this alchemy of, like, hard work and planning, but also a little bit of luck.
Right.
And I don't remember if you said the word timing, but when I look at it, it's also timing.
Yes.
Right? Like, someone who is talking about social justice issues may not have had the same career you're having now 10 years ago.
No.
Right?
The conversations that are happening in the world right now are, I mean, I speak at colleges, and when I see these young people and the questions that they ask me, the knowledge that they are dropping just casually, my mind is blown because I was not in that place when I was in college, and I didn't know anyone in that place. And my parents were not talking to me about the things that they're talking to me about now, right? And that are things that are happening in the world that they are upset about or they are impressed by or they're moved by. When I was in high school, we weren't in that. I don't know. Not to say that those conversations weren't happening. I just didn't feel like they were happening on the scale they are now.
No.
And I think the internet is a big, big part of that.
Yeah.
The ability for people who have never felt heard before or don't see themselves reflected in media, they've never heard their stories told. Or, you know, for me, that's what Shit White Girls Say was making a video that was about my personal experience and realizing there are millions of people that have had this experience. I had no idea. I remember telling my mom, oh, if I get 100,000 views on this, because everybody was making parodies.
Right.
And I thought, oh, this one has 100,000. I could do that much. A million in a day? Never in a million years did I think that.
But it struck a nerve.
Absolutely. And I do think, to your point about it is very difficult because of this moment, I think the internet makes it very difficult because you can essentially work all the time. You know, you don't
around the clock.
You don't check out, right?
Right?
Like, when breaking news happens and everybody's talking about it on Twitter, oftentimes we feel like, well, if I don't talk about it right now, I'm going to, like, miss my opportunity to, like, say something really impactful, or I have a take on this that I think people really need to hear, but tomorrow everyone's going to be talking about something else.
Yeah.
So I should just stay up for the next 3 hours and just, like, go off on Twitter.
Now, see, this is – okay. I'm so glad you said that, because this is where you and I differ.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes, yes.
You both love and are good at the interwebs.
Mm-hmm. I have a love-hate relationship with it.
I have a hate-hate. Mm-hmm. No, that's not true. It's very up and down for me, right? Like, I'll engage, and then I'm like, nope, can't do it. This is not benefiting my life. Spiritually, I'm being drained.
Right.
Where's my impact? And then I will literally leave the internet.
I will need more of that.
Well, but this is what I mean when I say, I wonder how much of that, though, is part of not just your career, but your calling, because you're not just on there.
Right.
You add value.
Right.
You build relationships. And you spend some time with some trolls. Like,
oh, yeah.
You actually engage
a
lot.
I also think it's because I grew up online. You know, I'm an only child. We had a computer lab at school. And I remember begging my parents, I want a computer. I want internet. And I went to HTML camp in eighth grade, and I learned how to code. I learned how to, I built like a Frogger game. I built like, there was only one other girl in our computer camp.
Oh, so you were Black Geek before Black Geek was cool.
She had a website.
I did not know.
And I was like, ooh, I want a website because that girl has one. And let me tell you, not a one person was reading that website all through middle school and high school. And then in college, I remember, like, a few people finding it.
What was it? You were just blogging?
Yeah, before it was blogging, like, back in the day, your internet service provider would give you an FTP, and I had Tripod, so it came with an FTP, and so
I don't even know these words.
A file transfer protocol, so you can upload files to the internet.
Okay.
And so they gave you your own little web space, and so a friend gave me, like, a bootleg of Photoshop. And I had a scanner because there was no digital cameras. So
right.
I would go get my photos developed, and then I would scan them, and then I would post them on my little website, and I would write about what happened in my day.
Oh, that's so cute.
And one girl I went to school with was reading it, and that was it. And then I bought my domain my senior year of high school. I bought Francesca.net. So 2002.
Wow.
I was like, I really want to do this. And then when I got to college, I was still – posting stuff on it. And a guy that I was kind of interested in had his own website. So, like, he knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan, the school I went to, gave us a little bit of web space, too. So I had some stuff up there. But I just had been doing it a really long time before anybody I knew in real life was doing it. And I also made a lot of friends
online. I was going to ask, what do you get from it, though? What do you personally, like, I know professionally, anybody can look at your career and see what you've gotten from it. But there's also got to be something that you're drawn to.
I think for me, it was the friendships. I felt like when I was in high school, I was popular. Like, I had a lot of friends, but I didn't feel like I was being myself. I felt like I was being this enhanced character that was, like, super confident and really funny and kind of, like, mean. Like, that was what was making me funny. My insecurities were being displayed in just, you know, talking a lot of shit and making jokes and making people laugh, but not always making them laugh in a positive way. And I felt like on the internet was a place where I could be open about my insecurities because I didn't think anyone was reading it, right? Like, no one was reading it, so it was fine. And then when I started building, like, a little audience, I was talking to people who were like, oh, I really relate to this. I remember, and I wish I could find this girl, a girl started reading my live journal, and we would send each other mixtapes. And she lived in, like, I don't even know, like, Minnesota or something.
Wow.
I never met this girl. And we would send each other these long letters and mixtapes, and we would just talk about boys and our bodies. And it just felt like these were people that weren't really judging me because they didn't know me in real life. They knew me on the internet in a way that was, like, more authentic than who I was in real life.
That's interesting. That's really, especially when I think about the conversation around not necessarily politics, but just the issues that you talk about all the time,
right?
And how we see people on the internet behaving in ways that they never would.
They would never. And that's the thing, though. I think some of that is real in the sense that there are people who will pop off online and they would never say those things in real life.
But so then, but that's the real them? Like, I always struggle with trying to figure out, like, is the internet the character?
Well,
or is it like, because in your story, you're saying I was actually more myself online than I was
offline.
I think
it's a little bit of both. It's like when someone gets drunk and they say something awful and they're like, "It's sorry, I was drunk." And you're like, no, you still did the thing. The alcohol just lowered your inhibitions. I think that's what the internet does. And everybody does some amount of performance, right? Like, you're not the same person with your boss that you are with your husband. I would hope not, because that is highly inappropriate. But I think on the internet, a lot of times people are like, ooh, I can say something anonymously and not have any repercussions, so I'm just going to, like, let it rip. And in real life, I'm not confident enough to say those things. I still think those things. I still feel those things. And that's why you have so many people who say super racist, super sexist stuff online that they would never have the nerve to say in real life. It's still really who they are. Then you also have people who become these, like, badasses online. And that is a performance in a different way, that it is masking a lot of insecurities. And they feel like they can, again, say and do things that they could never do in real life. So I think it's a mix of performance and a mix of real truth.
Yeah. So what are your rules of engagement, right? Like, when do you decide that it is worth? So we were talking today about two people that we know on the internet going back and forth and, like
just every day,
all sorts of, like, drama, shade, tea, whatever words you want to use for it. And it's just so messy.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are two types. There's that, when it's like people in real life who know each other having drama on the internet.
That they could just talk to each other.
Give sis a call.
Offline. And that is, like, what has been a big revelation for me that I talk about in the book, that, like, you know what? I learned this from Upworthy, where we would say, elevate the medium, elevate the conversation.
Mm.
That, like, if stuff is really serious and I really care about you, don't do it on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you're just making it worse.
Elevate the, like, okay, I know what you mean. Like, when we were saying, okay, if this is something worth talking about, I'm not going to send you an email about it.
Or a Slack about it.
Right, got it.
Yeah, because, you know, we worked in a remote company and so much stuff would happen online, not face to face. And so you would be having a really tense conversation with a coworker or a manager. And instead of doing it in Slack, where all 50 people in the company or on your team are watching it, take it to a private message.
Right.
Or say, like, let's get on Google Hang and, like, actually talk to each other. Let's actually pick up the phone. Enough people don't do that. And again, I have made that mistake so often. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to engagement, I try to ask myself, like, what is the purpose? Like, what am I hoping to get out of this? And some people are just in it for the retweets. Like,
yep.
No shade. They're saying this thing not because they actually want to squash beef with someone, or not because they think something positive is going to happen from the interaction. They want praise. They want everyone to laugh at their joke. They want to grow followers. They want to go viral, whatever it is.
Which is actually not that different from how some people behave. Like, I think back to right. being kids, and it was like the person, kind of the bully, like the person who said something and you knew they were saying it just for the laugh of the classroom.
Right.
It's like high school online.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's everywhere. In the workplace, you see that. That happens in relationships. Nothing changes from high school in many ways. So I ask myself, like, what the purpose is. And, you know, with trolls, yeah, sometimes the purpose is, okay, I know I can make a really funny joke in response to this dumb thing someone said to me, mm-hmm. and it will make people laugh. Or I know that this person said something really ignorant to me, and I know that I can answer this question in a way that other people will learn from. Mm-hmm. And so it's really not about them. It's about my followers seeing, like, oh, this is That's something that I've yep. heard my family members say, my partner say, my whoever say, and, like, Francesca has said in a really succinct, funny, direct way what it is, like, I needed to learn from that. And, like, mm-hmm. I can put that in my back pocket and I can use that thing. I really avoid people that go for, like, outright slurs.
Like, you don't engage with those?
No, I just block those people. And I think that I really try to, right now, at least, temper how often I respond to that negative stuff, because I realize it's just taking away time from the people who actually enjoy me, and it's not really fair to them. Mm. And I think what opened my eyes to that was, like, you know, God bless her, but sometimes, like, Rihanna engages with a lot of negative trolls, and I'm like, she's funny, right? She's super funny. But then when you look at her mentions, like, one time I was looking at some tweet where she said something really funny, and the responses were like, it's my birthday and I would love it if you just said happy birthday to me. It would, like, change my whole life. And I thought, oh, wow, instead of, like, changing this girl's life, she, like, engaged with, like, a troll who doesn't like her.
Right.
Right? And there are people who their entire Twitter is devoted to Rihanna. And, like, they put in their bio, like, Rihanna liked my tweet on, like, 1/27/2016. And I thought to myself, like, not that I'm at that place in my life or my career, but I realized, like, wow, I'm giving attention to people that don't like me. Meanwhile, I'm simultaneously ignoring people that do really like me. Mm-hmm. So
there's a message in that.
Yeah. Like, let me balance that. Right. Yeah. Like, there is sometimes can be value in those, like, negative, nasty tweets. But I just told myself I wanted to engage with positive people more often. And it's really cool when you respond to someone's tweet and they're like, I can't believe you responded. This is so cool. And I'm thinking, like, whatever. I'm literally on my couch in my pajamas. But
cool.
That feels great. Like, I'm so glad that you feel really good about this interaction. And I've had that with celebrities. And so I'm like, oh, I want to do more of that instead mm-hmm. of give that time and energy to people that don't like me, never going to like me, still don't like me.
Right. So you have this, you've got a fan base, you know, you've got a book coming out, you've worked on television shows, you're working on your own show. You've got all of these things that have at one point been on your goal list. And mm-hmm. I'm sure you have many, many more. But you're human, which means you probably also still every now and then have that little voice, the devil on your shoulder. Right?
Me?
What
yes.
does that voice say? What does the negative inner Francesca say?
The negative inner Francesca says, when this book comes out, there are going to be people who, like, go on Amazon and say that they hate it and they didn't even read it. And they're going to – and somebody's going to, like, screen cap something you said in the book, and they're going to take it out of context, and they're going to say, like, oh, see right here? I never saw it for her.
Right.
And this is why I don't fucks with Francesca.
And that's how they sound.
Like, they sound right? exactly like that. They sound exactly like that. Yeah, I hear that voice. I also hear the voice that says, you know, a book is really difficult in the sense that you spend so much time.
I'm on at my edits right now.
You spend so much time on it that it's almost like hard to be excited because you're just like, ugh, I just want this to happen. But also the fear of like, oh, I put all this time into this thing and like somebody can just tear it down and not even think about or understand how many hours I belabored over this thing and I went back and forth and I tweaked this word and I changed this around and blah, blah, blah. And that somebody, and again, this is something I'm trying to work on, not giving that power to a stranger who can just say like, well, I don't like it. And then like I fall apart,
Yeah, that's a lesson for everyone. I think if you are a person who creates in any medium at any level, right?
Yes.
Like, it's not just about writing books and television shows, but no matter what you're doing.
It could be a PowerPoint that you have to do for your office.
Like when you care about something so deeply, it's really hard not to give the power to the people who don't like it, who critique it, who find fault with it. Because you do want to, like, you want to engage, you want to get constructive criticism. But I think in those moments, I know I have to try to remember, what am I doing it for?
Right. And that's what I'm trying to do more of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really trying to remember, well, why did I do this? And I will say I have, like, the added padding of the fact that the book is called Well, That Escalated Quickly. And I think if people get upset about something I wrote in the book, I'm just going to go, well, that escalated quickly. See what I did there? I predicted this. I knew you were going to be pissed. I put it in the title. I genuinely, like, I had a meeting with my editor and they were like, we've talked to Amazon and let them know that, like, there could be a brigading campaign against your reviews. Like, it is a real
thing.
Because
you've had that on YouTube.
I've had it and I know people. We've known people that have had it.
Yep.
And so there was this moment of like, gosh, that's really scary. But then also, I talk about that in the book, right? So if you come on the Amazon review page and you see these nasty comments and then you like read what the book is about, you might just be like, oh, damn, she said that this was going to happen.
Right,
I want
to
read what else she said. So I try to think about why I do these things. I also try to think like, what's the worst thing that can happen? And sometimes the worst thing that can happen is really not that bad, right? Like, especially on the internet, people are mad about this thing right now and tomorrow they're going to be mad about something else.
What are some of your failures? Give me one.
Ooh, I would say, aside from engaging in the trolls, getting defensive when I've been called out, you know, and reaching for excuses rather than like actually trying to hear what the other person is saying. And that is so hard because when someone says, like, you said this thing that hurt me, it is so easy to just say, like, well, I didn't mean to hurt you. Here are all the reasons why you misinterpreted what I said.
Yep.
You're not actually hurt. You're actually being oversensitive. And maybe sometimes there's validity in those things, but I think it is not a good idea to diminish someone's very real feelings to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we step back, sometimes we can see there are grains of truth in there. And I've had that a number of times where someone has been upset about something we said on Decoded. I remember we did an episode, I think it was like the first episode, we had like a racism meter. The episode was Are Fried Chicken and Watermelon Racist?
Uh-huh.
And it was like about where these stereotypes came from. And we had a little meter in the corner that was like not so racist. And then the top racist was like Hitler. And so the little thing would go back and forth. And I didn't make it. I mean, it's my show, but like somebody made it and somebody was really upset about it. They were like, how dare you use Hitler in this way? And my initial response was like, well, I don't edit the show. Like I didn't make that thing.
Right.
I had nothing to do. Like I wrote the script, I went in and I filmed it, and then it goes off into somebody else's hands, right? But while those things are true, that doesn't erase, like, the hurt that that person felt, and it was valid, right? Like, people use Hitler as this, like, measurement all the time while not being sensitive to the real anti-Semitism that's happening right now.
Right.
And also, like, not acknowledging America's, like, how complicit we were in the Holocaust. And there's just so much to unpack there that, like, I didn't really know or hadn't really thought about in a meaningful way until somebody said, like, you said this thing and it hurt me. And my initial reaction was to be like, no. Like, what? I didn't hurt you. I mean, we're saying he was racist. We're saying he was bad, right? So, like, how can you be mad about this thing? And, like, I didn't do it. Like, I didn't even make this thing, you know? And so I'm just, again, really fortunate that people gave me the space to acknowledge that I had screwed up in how I responded and then to fix it, right? And then to say to my team, like, look, we got to be better about these references. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't pit two things against each other. It's not a contest. It would have been just as effective if the meter said, like, super racist instead of Hitler.
Right, that could have worked.
It totally would have worked, right?
And
also, like, I need to be more diligent about, like, fact-checking and, like, looking at everything that gets said in the script and everything that gets put on screen. And, again, a good learned lesson for me. Mm-hmm. But it was one that it really stung right at when I first got called out for that.
The, you know, title says Memoirs and Mistakes. You've made mistakes. You've learned. Part of the lesson of the book is that no one's perfect, and all of these lessons have got you where you are today, and you're teaching other people so that maybe they won't go through some of the same mistakes. But my question for you overall, and this is a big question, so answer it however you want.
Okay.
But, like, how do you see the impact of this? Do you see the world visibly getting better as a result of what you're doing?
You know, I'm going to use something a wise person recently said to me during this podcast, that all of the joints make up the body.
Yes, yes.
And I think that the book hopefully will inspire people, one, to be a little less hard on themselves. Mm. I'm always flattered when people say to me, like, oh, you taught me so much and I really look up to you. But then I always feel a little uncomfortable when it goes into, like, and I just feel so bad because I said this and this and I didn't know this until I watched your show. And I'm thinking, I didn't know that thing until we did research for the episode
right.
that then became the show. And so I think people, a lot of well-meaning, empathetic people are just really hard on themselves about where they are in their journey, mm-hmm. in their understanding, in their place in the world, whether that's career or relationships. And so I hope that people who know me and people that don't know me can read my story and think, like, huh, maybe I don't need to be so hard on myself. Like, mm-hmm. I can screw up. She can screw up. And, like, she got a book deal. Like, maybe my screw-ups will not, like, end my whole world, you know? And,
yeah.
and I can recover from them and learn from them. And also that I can encourage people to have important conversations with people in their lives that are important to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we often shy away from talking about things that make us uncomfortable or things where we have to critique the behavior of somebody that we love, especially if that person is a parent mm-hmm. or a family member or, you know, somebody you work with. And I think that work is really necessary. And I think post-election, we realized there were a lot of people that we should have been having meaningful conversations
and hard conversations, yeah.
that we were not. And I have learned from the times I did it wrong and from the times that I did it right, and I felt good about the way that it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that this book, people walk away with, like, real tangible tools that they can use when they have conflict online and in real life.
How do you stay grounded with all of this that's going on in the world?
I have a husband that drags me, like, all the time.
Like, isn't that the beauty of partners? They will really drag you.
It really I think that that's the way it should be, because you don't want – and you know what? I count you in this circle of people that keep me grounded, who I know can be honest with me, and that if I have a twinge of discomfort about something or somebody calls me on something and I don't understand it and I'm like, is this person wrong? I can check with Erica. I can check with my husband. I can check with my mom. I can check with my bestie. And I know that they'll be honest with me
mm-hmm.
because I have cut people out of my life who weren't honest with me, right?
Mm.
When you are like, does this look okay? And they're like, yeah, it looks great. And you're like, this looks a mess. Why did you lie to me?
You cut them out of your life then?
I'm just like, we're done. Girl, my Spanx were showing. Why didn't you tell me?
Don't call me again.
I mean, it's like not, it's a cumulative type
right,
of thing.
Right.
It's not just like a one thing. My literary agent, I had gone and had meetings with all sorts of literary agents, and everybody had been super positive and were like, this was really great. We'd love to work with you. And when I had my meeting with my current literary agent, she said, oh, this is good, but it could be better. And I thought, like, oh, wait a second.
You're the one.
I could work with you. I want somebody who's going to tell me, like, you missed the mark on this.
Yeah.
This is how it's going to be better. Because then when they tell you you got it right, you really can believe them.
Mm.
And My husband is definitely that for me. My manager is that for me. My agent is that for me. Because I've worked on some stuff where my agent's like, eh, I didn't like that. Nope. And everyone's like, that was good. That was really good.
Your manager will be like, nah.
And he's like, that was not the move. You know, I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. So I think I encourage people to surround themselves with people who are honest with them, even when it hurts and you don't necessarily want that honesty, but it's going to help you in the long run.
What advice would you give to someone who is kind of stumbling along the way? You know, we talk about a calling, and there's a way of looking at the idea of a calling that's very clear. I know exactly what it is that I'm meant to do, and I am following this whatever, this vision, this voice. And then there's the reality, which we talked about in the beginning, which is kind of like, I kind of know some things, and I have some dreams, but I'm just, what would you say to the person who is at the beginning of that, or maybe even the middle? Let's put it like this. They're nowhere close to right. seeing kind of the manifestation of all this success. They're not anywhere near the things they want to accomplish, but they feel like, I know that I'm called to do something and I can't figure it out.
I think the most important thing is to not compare yourself to anybody else. And, you know, I feel like...
You just tweeted that today.
I really did. And it was really for myself. That tweet was not for y'all. It was, comparison is the thief of joy. Sometimes I tweet things that people are like, wow, this really spoke to me. I was like, it was for me. And I tweeted it so I would have a record of the fact, like, girl, stop comparing yourself to these people out here. And the internet is really bad for that.
Which is why I'm not on it all the time.
Listen, you are doing the right thing. And I need more of that in my life, because there's nothing worse than like a Friday night when you don't have anywhere to be and you're on Instagram and everyone's like, I'm at this party, I'm doing this, just booked this great job, like making it rain over here, like I found a diamond necklace. You're just like, what? It's just like, why? You can't do that with your career or with your love life or with anything. You are looking at a curated, filtered view of someone's life. Like, nobody is on Instagram talking about how, like, they're stressed out about their taxes because they didn't file last year. And,
right.
like, now, you know, like, shit's creeping up on them. Like, people don't talk about the real, like, people don't talk about, like, the real stuff, right?
And even when they do, it's with a gorgeous selfie.
Right. There is nothing worse than when it's like a hot picture of a girl and it's just like, sometimes I'm sad. And you're like, what? Why is it just like a hot picture of you? So like, don't compare yourself to anybody else. But at the same time, people whose careers you admire can be really inspiring to say like, wow, you know what? Let me go back and see how this person started. And that's something I love about podcasts. I love to listen to interviews with people whose careers I'm like, ooh, I would love to have her career. Let me listen to this. That Making Oprah podcast changed my life.
I remember you, like, we talked on the phone about it. You were like, girl.
I was like, you need to listen to this right now.
I was like, already have.
I listened to that podcast and I remember that she talked about writing in her journal before her show started. And I was like, you know what? I need to get back on my journal because I'm going through all these cool things in my career and I want a record of how I felt right before the book came out, like right before I filmed my first pilot, right before I sold this television show, before I like worked on this script or I walked this red carpet. Like, how was I feeling, right? So that like 10 years from now, I can look back and remember. And that was something I picked up from Oprah, because she's somebody that has a career that I would love to have a career like that, you know? So doing your research and seeing like what you can learn from people, what they did right, what they did wrong, and how you can apply that to your own journey has been really helpful for me. And I think can help give you a roadmap if you're feeling like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right. And it doesn't mean that it's going to work out for you that same way.
No.
But it's some place to start, you know? I think the internet is also... Right now, with like the celebration of Black Girl Magic and everybody, it also can make you feel like you're more like other people than you actually are.
Right.
What I mean by that is like, so I personally have kind of looked in this moment sometimes and been like, oh, I'm not doing what this person's doing and what this person. And I'm like, but girl, you're not anything like you're nothing like them. The only thing that's similar is that y'all both Black.
Right. No, everybody's lane is different.
So different.
Yeah. It is really difficult because it used to be if you were working on a project, like you had no place to broadcast it.
Right.
And tell everybody like, I'm working on this project. I just had this great meeting, leaving an audition that I totally nailed. Like, you used to just do it and then it would happen and that would be it. And right. now you like hear like play by play what everybody else is doing. And it's really hard to tune that out and just say like, I'm going to focus on me. To your point about stepping back from the internet, I deleted Twitter off of my phone. I mean, I put it back.
Like, when did you do that?
You're like, girl, I've seen you on the timeline this morning. No, when I was doing the pilot, I was just getting really stressed. I was working on the book and the pilot at the same time, and I was getting really stressed, and I was seeing other people get dragged, as you know, really stresses me out, because mm-hmm. I'm just like, it could be me.
You're so cute. Because that really does when
like,
that happens.
I'm like,
you get
oh my
upset.
God, look at what's happening to this person. This is terrible. I want to like hug them. Like, I want to put like baby oil on their edges. Like, it's just, it's really rough. And so I realized, and I was dealing with a lot of harassment, and it was just bad. And I thought, well, I can't delete Twitter, but like I can just delete it off my phone right. so that I don't see it. And I'm not, man, it was so funny. I was like cooking dinner right after I had done that. And I was like, what do I do now? I don't, what do I do while I'm cooking? I usually just sit there and scroll. And right. I was like, I guess I just have to cook and be at peace with my own thoughts.
What is that?
It was really embarrassing. I had a moment of thinking, like, wow, I don't know what to do if I'm not just, like, looking at a stream of, like, everyone else's thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it really helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, unplugging has been really good and just not chiming in on everything.
Yes. Yes, sometimes it's good to just be quiet and mm-mm. let things unfold.
Let somebody else say it.
Right. Says the person who actually has made a career saying things.
That's true. Like, literally wrote the book on it.
Right.
Yeah, but you know what? I pat myself on the back enough times to say, like, you know what? I did not step into that. I didn't have to say anything about that thing. Because I don't, again, checking in with yourself, like, what is this achieving? Like, what am I... I'm putting this thing into the world, but why? Why am I doing this? What am I getting out of this? Is this getting me closer to the goals that I've set for myself? Oftentimes the answer is no. I mean, I like to be petty like everybody else, but I'm trying to be smarter about it because, ugh, man, when I was at Nightly Show, I would be popping off on Twitter. And I remember one time Larry really? Was like, oh, yeah. But I was arguing with people about something I said on the show. You know, it was during the election. And so Twitter was just like a dumpster fire. Right. Every day people were fighting about something. And I was arguing with somebody. And at the end of every episode, Larry would sit us down and talk to us about the episode.
Larry Wilmore.
I, you know, just casually just Larry. Call him Larry. I
mean, just in case people don't know.
Yes. No, you're right. And he said something to me. He was like, you know, you're very funny, but you give these people a lot of energy. And I thought, oh, my God, my boss has been seeing, like, all of these tweets that, like, you know, sometimes you fire off a tweet while you're doing something else and you're not, like, really investing. But, you know, like, I was staying on it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, oh, my God, I forgot that my boss follows me on Twitter and sees me just, like, dragging people and, like, saying shady shit. And I thought, like, oh, my gosh, this is so bad. Like, why would he want to work with me? Mm. Like, why would he want to work? Why would anyone want to hire me?
Like, right.
I looked at my Twitter timeline. I was like, wow, I'm just, like, arguing with racists all day. I would not hire me.
Right.
So... you know, I try to think about that a little bit.
Right, a little bit.
I know. And maybe people are listening to this and cringing, thinking about like, oh, gosh. The thing. I mean, we see people
all
get in
time.
Trouble for that stuff all the time. But and sometimes it's not as drastic as losing your job.
Right.
It's just you have a job opportunity and you don't even know that you're up for this opportunity or you don't even know that you lost this opportunity because you were on Twitter just being silly.
Yeah.
And somebody saw that and thought like, I don't want to bring that into this company.
Yeah. And it's hard to think about, too, as you're talking about really, really important moments. Like
right.
we were spoiled and we worked at Upworthy because it was our job to actually talk about important issues.
Right.
But even for those folks who don't have a career in entertainment or in media, there's a lot of people. And when I go do media training, they're like, I can't talk. I care a lot about issue X, Y, and Z. I can't talk about it online. I represent my job. I represent my company. So what I think is really helpful about all these lessons that you're sharing here and sharing in the book is it's about finding your voice, where you can use it, how you can use it, making some mistakes along the way, but really, you know, having a vision for who you want to be in the world and how your voice can help you be that.
Absolutely. And being open to the possibilities of that thing changing, that you might accidentally stumble onto something that you're like, wow, I really love this thing.
Yeah.
I'm really good at this thing. You know, YouTube was not a career path when I was in high school, when I was in college. Twitter was not a place that, you know, people were making friends and building careers from.
Right.
And so being open to the possibilities of saying, this is a thing I really want to do, but if the stars align and show that you're actually really good at something else and you really enjoy it, that you can like take a little detour and maybe that will help you get to that big goal, or maybe you'll find some other thing that really fulfills you and the big goal is not the thing that you want to do anymore and you have a new big goal.
Well, I'm inspired. I can't wait to finish. I haven't finished reading the book.
It's totally okay.
But I'm excited to finish reading it, and I'm excited for it to go out into the world and for everyone to hear more of your story.
Thank you so much. It's so funny because I feel like you're going to be reading this book and being like, oh, I remember when that happened because right. Francesca texted me, or I remember when that thing happened and I was like, girl, what are you doing? You know,
right.
Or things that happened before we knew each other.
Yep.
Which I love. And I just am so inspired by you. And I am so thankful that you are a part of my life.
Aww.
Because you really are my compass in many ways.
Aww.
I know I can ask you and you will always keep it real with me. I appreciate that so much. And I'm excited for what's happening for you because I know you have a lot of things in the works.
Stuff is cooking.
You know, yes, exactly. And it's going to be phenomenal. It is a good time to be a creative Black girl out here.
Oh, that's a perfect closing line. Thank you, Freya.
Thank you, Erica.
Oh, can y'all tell how much I love her? Many thanks to Fran for hanging out with me in LA. And if you haven't already, make sure to pick up her book, Well, That Escalated Quickly. It's really good. And of course, hit me up on Instagram at Miss E. Will or on Twitter at Created by Erica to tell me what you thought of our conversation. Also, make sure to hit up that advice line at 702-670-CALL, okay? The Call is published, of course, by Man Repeller and produced by the lovely Melody Rao. I'm your host, E, also known by my government name, Erica Williams Simon. And until next time, y'all know what to do. Keep loving, keep fighting, keep working, and above all, keep answering your call. Peace, y'all. Calling, 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 calling.